Today's episode of the Axon Creative Podcast is brought to you by FreshBooks. Join the 24 million people who have used FreshBooks. Try it free for 30 days with no catch and no credit card required. All you have to do is go to freshbooks.com/accidental and enter accidental creative in the how did you hear about this section. Hey everyone, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am your host. I'm also the author of several books, including The Accidental Creative, Die Empty, Louder Than Words, and the new book, Herding Tigers, which is about how to be the leader that creative people need. And that's what we're going to talk about on today's show. Our guest is Julie Zhu. Julie is the author of a new book called The Making of a Manager. She's also the VP of Product Design at Facebook. And she's going to talk about some of the struggles that we have as we step into the role of a manager. What are some of those unique pressures that we face when we enter into leading teams of people rather than just doing the work? You know, when we are first hired, typically our job is to do the work. It's to make whatever is on our plate great. But once we're promoted into a managerial role, suddenly we're responsible for the work of other people, which is a fundamentally different thing. So Julie and I have a great conversation about what it means to manage other people, some of those unique pressures we face as managers, especially as early managers. But listen, if you've been managing for a while, sometimes you need a refresher on some of the fundamentals of good management. And Julie does a great job of speaking, I think, to new as well as experienced managers in this book and in this conversation. And also those of us who are managed by people, right? Even if we're not managing other people, it helps sometimes to understand some of the pressures and dynamics that our own manager is facing so that we can be better team members. So we're going to talk about all of that on today's show again with Julie Zhu. Before we dive in, I want to let you know a couple of things. First of all, I have a daily show. It's called The Daily Creative. And I recently sent out a request for topics for The Daily Creative, and I got back basically enough feedback to fill an entire month. So the entire month of April is going to be filled with questions from listeners. But if you have a listener question for The Daily Creative, feel free to go to accidentalcreative.com, the contact form there, and send it in. We'd love to hear what you want to hear about on The Daily Creative Show. Also, today's episode is brought to you by FreshBooks. So I know we have a lot of small business owners that listen to the show. Do you remember when you started your small business? I mean, it's no small feat, right? It's a lot of late nights, a lot of early mornings, the occasional all-nighter. I remember when I was launching Accidental Creative, I spent a lot of 5 to 7:30 in the morning and 8:30 to 11:30 at night hours trying to pull things together to get ready to launch the business. The reality is that when you are a small business owner, you're insanely busy. You just are. So why not make things a little easier? Our friends at FreshBooks have the solution. FreshBooks invoicing and accounting software is designed specifically for small business owners. It's simple, it's intuitive, and it keeps you way more organized than a dusty shoebox filled with crumpled receipts. Create and send professional-looking invoices in about 30 seconds and get them paid 2 times faster with automated online payments. You can file expenses even quicker and keep them perfectly organized for tax time. And the best part is that FreshBooks grows right alongside your business. You'll always have the tools you need when you need them without ever having to learn the ins and outs of accounting. Nobody wants to do that, right? So join the 24 million people who've used FreshBooks. Try it free for 30 days with no catch and no credit card required. All you have to do is go to freshbooks.com/accidental and enter accidental creative in the how did you hear about this section. That's freshbooks.com/accidental and enter accidental creative in the how did you hear about this section to get started. We thank FreshBooks for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. All right. Well, it's great to have on the show today, Julie Zhu. Julie is the author of a new book called The Making of a Manager, What to Do When Everyone Looks to You. Julie, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
So I really enjoyed this book. I think this is a book that when you read it, you realize how is this book not already in the world, right? Because it's such a practical guidebook for managers. But I want to take a couple of steps back before we talk about the book itself. You don't just write books. You actually have lived all of this advice out that you're giving. Tell us a little bit about your non-writing job. What do you do in the world?
Yes, absolutely. So I graduated college. And I was very lucky at right afterwards to kind of join one of the hottest startups of the time. And, you know, this is 2006. The company was Facebook, and I was Facebook's first intern. First intern, you know, the company was like small enough to fit in a backyard party. And, you know, it was a very exciting time. This is a product that I loved. I had been using in college. Remember, back in 2006, Facebook was a college and high school service. This is the kind of thing where my mom is like, where are you working? Like, are you sure you're going to do that? Like, I have no idea what this company is. So it was a really, really exciting time. And, you know, like other like, I think I've been very fortunate to kind of be on that rocket ship and to sort of see the company be a part of its growth, its transformation, you know, kind of crazy wild ride. And so what my path, you know, I started as an engineering intern. Then I transitioned to be a part of the design team, you know, and we were creating basically the user experience of Facebook. So like, what did you see when you loaded the site? And, you know, how could you interact? How could you share? How could you, you know, go and find a person that you met and find them on Facebook? So we were sort of building and designing all of those user interactions. And then a couple years later, I was given the opportunity to manage, you know, about half of the design team. And that was my sort of formative experience in learning how to manage at a very, very fast-paced, very fast-growing kind of company. And so I've been on that management ship ever since. And today I oversee the design, the entirety of the design and user experience team for the Facebook service.
Oh, that's great. So what I love about the fact that that this book is in the world and that you wrote this book is that you have seen every side of management, right? You've really experienced management as an intern coming into an organization. You've experienced it as a new manager, having to manage in a really high pressure environment and a very fluid environment. And then now obviously you've managed managers and now overseeing design at Facebook. Obviously you have a much more significant responsibility, but you've really seen from every single angle what good management looks like and probably have encountered, you know, what bad management looks like as well.
Yes. As well as made a host of mistakes along the way in that path.
Absolutely. And you know, one of the things I loved about the book is that you're not afraid to share some of those insights that came from failure, not just from success, which, you know, as we all know, like a lot of books are written by people who backwards sanitize their experiences, you know, and people sort of at the top of their game, you know, and sort of talking about that. But I love that so many of the bits of advice and wisdom that you share in the book are rooted in experiences and wisdom that was gained, not just from massive success, but also learnings, right, along the way. So just to kind of ground our conversation, how do you define manager? What does that word mean to you?
Yeah. And I talk about this a lot in like the first couple of chapters of my book, because if I go back to when I started, you know, managing, I'm 25 years old, you know, I feel like I've just won the lottery. I'm like really excited. You know, I feel like this is the first step to this wonderful career that I'm going to have. But then I'm also like, I don't really know what I'm doing.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, so that's like the other thought that's in my head. And when I look back on that, I think a lot of the reason why is because I don't think I had a great grounding on what management really is about. And I think it's actually quite common because, you know, obviously we're all exposed to managers. You know, I've had a host of jobs throughout high school, throughout college, and each of those I had a supervisor, I had a manager. And so I think it's very easy for us to sort of look at those examples and be like, oh, I think I know what a manager does. You know, my manager is like running meetings and then they host one-on-ones with me and they like, you know, write my review or like determine if I should get fired or if I should get promoted, you know, and that's like what the job of a manager is. And I understood the job of a manager in kind of these very, very tactical kind of, you know, almost like checklists, right? Yeah, it's like, here are the actions that a manager should take. And that was my understanding of management when I became a manager. And, you know, it took me, I think, like a couple years to, I think, get to the understanding that actually, you know, all of those are like what they are, they're tactics. But the way that you determine whether or not a manager is a great manager is you need to look at like what is the outcome of the team's work. You know, management to me is like the art of helping lead a group of people to do something and to achieve those outcomes in a better manner. And it's however you define better, right? If your job, you know, if your group of people is supposed to try and make awesome design work, you know, which is, you know, my job when I started, then a great manager is someone whose team regularly produces really, really great really great design work. And a mediocre manager is someone whose team produces like average design work, and a bad manager's team doesn't produce good design work. Yeah. And if your outcome is like, hey, I'm running a business, I'm a CEO, you know, it's like, then we're going to look at like, how is your business doing? You know, are you exceeding expectations? Are you profitable? You know, are you growing? You know, and those are kind of the, in the long run, these are kind of the metrics of success of what distinguishes, you know, a great manager from a mediocre or a bad manager. Yeah. And you know, and then you look at like, okay, that's a really, really broad problem. Like, how do I go and get a group of people to, you know, like get to these amazing outcomes, right? And then this is where you look at like, okay, what are the toolkits of the manager, right? And there's basically three things that you can do. You know, you can affect the people, and that means, you know, hiring, you know, managing performance, coaching. That's obviously a huge part of it. It's very hard to produce great work if you don't have the right talent and the right skill set. I think the second bucket is around process, you know, and this is sort of where we get into like the tactics of like, okay, are you running efficient meetings? Like, does everyone kind of know what they need to do? You know, if like you need to build, you know, design a solution, that's great. Are we, you know, making sure that we're exploring wide enough, right? Or are we just taking the first idea that comes to mind, which then again, maybe isn't the best idea. So process is a huge part. And I think the third one as well, super, super important, is just purpose. It's like, does everyone understand on the team what success looks like? Because, you know, if John thinks that, you know, success is like, we work super fast and, you know, we get to this outcome, and Susie thinks that success is like, you know, customers are happy and they might be doing different things to achieve those outcomes, but like they might be actually in conflict. And so it's also really important to define for the team, you know, that everyone understands, like, what is the purpose behind the work? Are we, you know, what are we trying to aim for? Like, what does like wild success look like? What should the whole of like this work sum up to be?
I really like that you break it down that way, because, you know, when you were talking at the beginning, you said, you know, well, the results, right, are how you measure whether a person is a good manager or not. And I know that, I'm sure that you know many people, and I know many people who have achieved great results while simultaneously completely tanking their team in the process, you know, and wringing them dry. And they have a retention problem because people don't want to work for them. And so if you only measured them by the end result, the sort of tangible results that a lot of people look at from the outside, you would say that's a good manager, but the team is suffering as a result. But when you break it down into people, process, and purpose, you have to ask, okay, am I achieving the results, but am I coaching and hiring properly, right? Am I retaining my talent? You know, is my process one that's repeatable, or am I completely burning out my team over and over and over again? You know, I think, and then purpose, you know, as you said, I think you mentioned John and Susie having different ideas of what success looks like. Those things happen in a vacuum, typically. When there's a vacuum of good management, people invent their own narrative, and often the team begins to split as a result.
Yeah. And I'm really glad you also brought up the time period aspect, because you're absolutely right. You know, you can get great results for a quarter, maybe a half, maybe even a year or two. Yeah. And you do that by, you know, being a dictator, by like, you know, maybe doing a lot of stuff yourself, by, you know, having your people burn the midnight oil. But those things also aren't sustainable. And so a lot of times when we look at results, like, I think we also have to look at like a far enough time horizon, because great management is about sustained great outcomes, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like you did it for a quarter and then you spent, you know, 2 years paying down debt where you had bad results because, you know, your whole team quit, you know? And I think that we have to kind of also look at a longer time horizon, which I think sometimes can be hard, you know, because you know, again, the way that sometimes, you know, we're evaluating things, it's like so in the moment. It's like, what is the thing that happened like in the last month or in the last 6 months? But great managers, like, you know, we're looking at like a career of 5-10 years, and you look back and you look at, you know, what this person has managed to do or the turnarounds. And like, you know, usually with great managers, you hear a very consistent story. And that's because they manage to, you know, inspire talent, retain talent, and continually, you know, help that team find that purpose and be motivated to do what is necessary to make it happen in a long-term sustainable fashion.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would, you know, just sort of reading between the lines of what you just said, I think a lot of times the reason that managers fall into that trap of not thinking long-term and not investing in their people, not investing in the process, not communicating purposes, because it's become about them and not about their team, right? Mm-hmm. I think bad managers are primarily concerned about themselves and their career. And you have to manage your career, of course, but mm-hmm. you know, when you commit yourself to the people that you're serving as a manager, it's funny how things tend to work out pretty well for you as well in the process, mm-hmm. right?
That's absolutely right. And you know, it is, I work in Silicon Valley, so, you know, everything is very, very fast-paced. It's very common to hear the story of, like, a company you've never heard about, and then they have overnight success, and then within 4 years, they're, like, the hottest thing. But I think if you also look at the life cycle of companies, it kind of speaks to, like, you know, because it's, like, a lot of times companies don't last more than, like, 2, 3, 4 years, sure. right? And, you know, in Silicon Valley, like, a 10-year-old company or a 20-year-old company or a 30, like, those are, like, kind of old, you know, in the relative conversation. But then you think about like, okay, well, what are these like actually like lasting sustainable companies? You look at Disney, you look at like, you know, companies that have been around for hundreds of years, and you think about what does it take to be successful for like decades or for hundreds of years? Mm-hmm. And that's sort of where like I sometimes, you know, have I love reading the autobiographies of like, you know, leaders and in history, because I do think that some of those qualities of great leadership, you know, it's even sometimes hard to see until you've actually been able to build up enough time and you can look at a long enough period of results.
Yeah. Well, and that really makes me think of another thing that you say in the book, which I thought was again so poignant, is you strive to be human, not a boss, right? Mm-hmm. And the best leaders, the best managers are human. So what are some ways that people who are listening, maybe they're in a managerial role, like what are some, I mean, they, of course, everybody's thinking, well, I'm a human, like I'm not, you know, but like, does it mean to strive to be more human?
Right. I think one of the biggest mistakes I made when I started out as a manager is I had this perception that like, oh my gosh, everyone is looking to me to know what to do. And so I need to come off like I know exactly what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, you know, I was sort of like playing this role or somehow like acting like I was, you know, all that, or that I was like, you know, extremely competent and, you know, authoritative. And that was what you were supposed to do, like as a boss. And it took me a really long time to learn that, that wasn't even what got the best results, you know, for me and my team. And in fact, whenever I was able to express more vulnerability, whenever I, you know, could be honest and say, you know, I actually, you know, you're asking me this question, I know, but honestly, I don't know X, Y, and Z. Let's work together. Like, you know, let's actually like brainstorm. How do we like, you know, solve this problem, right? When I was able to actually, I think, show up more as like a partner, as someone who didn't always know the answers, as someone who had their own kind of hopes and dreams and fears and vulnerabilities, I felt like I was able to make a much deeper connection with my team, and that we were able to establish, I think, a much more real, trusting, and authentic relationship. Mm. And that made a huge difference in our ability to work together.
Isn't it funny how we assume that? We assume that if we project that we have all the answers, that we're going to earn our team's trust. And it's kind of the opposite, right? It's yes. when we project that we have all the answers that people think, I don't know if I trust you, because I know right. that's not true. Like, I've seen you screw up before. I know you don't have all the answers, so I wish you wouldn't pretend.
Right. And then I think what is happening is people, you know, then, you know, your reports will show up and they're playing a role as well, right? They're playing the role of like, oh, since you're going to act like you're the boss, you know, I'm going to act like I'm like that great employee and I'm going to tell you that everything is going great and that I'm doing well. And, you know, and whatever they're going through, you know, they may not actually tell you how they truly feel, and in which case you can't really help them. And you know, and I think that's a really huge missed opportunity, again, for us to like work together and to actually help each other, you know, achieve our collective goals.
Yeah. So a lot of people listening manage quote unquote creative teams, right? I mean, we're all creative. Mm-hmm. We have to solve problems, but I'm talking about the disciplines within the creative field. So designers, mm-hmm. writers, you know, people who are having to go to work and make it up every day, basically. And one of the chapters in the book is about offering feedback. And I would be curious, you know, what your advice would be to those people who are leading people in the creative disciplines about how to offer better feedback in the midst of the process.
Yeah. You know, I love actually being in design and creative fields because I actually feel like feedback is it's something we've talked about, you know, like I think as a designer, like you go to design school and it's like day one, it's like, you know, you're doing critiques and you're, you know, in the practice of like giving feedback. I'd say the most important thing I've learned about feedback though is like, it's not just like, it is about doing it more. And oftentimes, you know, you're not giving as much feedback as maybe would best benefit other people. But, and so the first thing I would say is like, it's always, always, always good to ask for feedback, because that's, you're going to get more honest, you know, tidbits that are going to help you get a better sense of like, you know, how your work could be get better, how you might be better, or even what you're doing well, which is extremely motivating as, you know, too, right? To hear like, hey, people think this is going really well, or you're doing this really well, like you could lean into it, you know, go find more opportunities to do that thing. So, I mean, I think the first piece of advice, you know, is like, you know, you think you might be giving some feedback, or it's like, you can probably like, how could you do like 5x that? How could you do 10x that? Now that's both asking for feedback, which is hard. You know, we sometimes don't do it because we're afraid, well, what if that insecurity I have actually comes back in the feedback, you know? And so we're afraid sometimes to know, like, you know, what other people think, but I've felt that it's always better to actually know the truth, you know, and to kind of feel grounded and to get that. But I think the second is just like, feedback is a gift. And when you give it to someone else with the sincere intent of helping them, you know, and not because you want to be right, or not, again, not for your own ego, but with the sincere intent of trying to help them be better or help their work be better, then that is like a great thing that you're, you know, helping someone else with. And that is a very generous and it's a very selfless act. And it's the kind of thing that I think, you know, really speaks to leadership, right? So I think those are the first two things I would say. And I think the second thing I would say, especially to creatives, because I think a lot of times people get that message of like, great, great, I'm going to go and give feedback and I'm going to, you know, see this piece of design work and I'm going to tell you everything that I think is like bad or whatever about it, right? I think the second most important thing I would say is that, you know, your feedback only matters if it's heard by the other party. And so it's not just about counting like how many times did I say X or Y or how many times would I even write, but it's like how many times did the other person hear what I had, like truly hear it and then change their behavior as a result. And I think it's really important to always like look at like, okay, am I being successful by being like, what does the other party think and what effect did they have on them? Because, you know, I think we also see a lot of examples sometimes of like people giving a lot of feedback, but because they gave it in a manner that felt, you know, let's say mean or petty or whatever it is, the other person doesn't hear it. You know, the other person has already wrote you off as like, you know, the person who just like shits on all their work, right? And therefore they're just not going to really hear the feedback. They're not going to internalize it and they're not going to actually take productive action against it. And also there's other things like if you say a bunch of words but like people don't understand what you mean by your feedback, then you haven't succeeded either because the other person hasn't heard it. They haven't changed. They haven't, you know, made it into productive action. So you have to also judge like how good is your feedback or are you doing enough of it by like the effect that it has on the other person. And that's hard sometimes because, you know, that sometimes does mean that you have to also get better at your own manner of giving feedback.
Yeah. And I always like to tell people, your voice as a leader is not what you say, it's what other people hear, right? It's yes. how they receive you. It's just like a brand. Like, your brand isn't what you define. Your brand is what other people think of when they experience you, you know, yes. as a business. And I think this all gets back to a point you made earlier, which is about being human, right? It's about exhibiting empathy and understanding that just because this is the way I want to give feedback doesn't necessarily mean that's the way other people want to receive it. And that could be different for everybody on your team, right? Every person could need a different kind of approach.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think the other thing that is so important is, like, sometimes it isn't, like, to be able to effectively have your feedback be heard, you have to do a lot more to establish the relationship with the person, you know, just like how, you know, maybe with your family, with your best friend, you can, like, you know, I use this example, like, your best friend goes and tries on a sweater and you think it looks horrible. You could probably tell her, hey, I think it doesn't look good on you. And she's not going to be offended because she's your best friend and she knows that, you know, you're saying it because you have her best interests at heart. But if you don't have that relationship with someone yet and you're like, I think that looks horrible, you know, that person might be like, you know, actually, like, what do you mean? You know, like, are you, like, attacking me? And so sometimes before you can even give the most meaningful, best feedback or have it be heard or have it be actionable, you need to actually work on that relationship first and figure out how to get to that deeper connection where there is mutual trust. And when the other person truly believes, hey, you're doing this, you know, I know you have my best interest at heart. I know you're doing it for me, not for you, not because you want to look good, not because, you know, you want to have, like, a, you know, sound smart, but, like, you're doing it because you truly care and you want to help me.
Oh, that's great. Well, Julie Zhu, you have written a wonderful book that is immensely practical. And I think anybody out there who is managing others needs to definitely pick up a copy. It's called The Making of a Manager. The author is Julie Zhu. Julie, where can people go to find you if they want to learn more about the book and learn more about the work that you do?
Yeah, so my website is juliezhuo.com. Everyone does misspell my name. It is Zhuo. And that will have a lot of information about, you know, my speaking events, blog posts or podcasts that I've done, as well as obviously information about the book. The book should be available on Amazon, on all major retail sites. Yeah, I'm really, really excited to go and talk more about this and to share it with the world.
Fantastic. Well, Julie, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you so much, Todd.
And as always, many thanks to you for listening. If you like this episode, make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or join the email list at accidentalcreative.com/subscribe. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.